Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to another episode of Lost in the Static. I am Josh Hadley. Dustin the Kid, I don't know where he is, but Glenn is with us from the UK.
Hello, how are you doing?
And then Sarah is with us from the tumultuous America.
Spooky! Oh, you
didn't let me do that.
Ah.
So, before anything else happens, let's do this. Go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code STATIC to get 10 free gifts. 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping. All for using the promo code STATIC at adamandeve.com. You can't not do that. Now, tonight, what we're going to talk about is journalistic integrity in movies, music, and gaming. Now, what I mean by that is a lot of people like to not count movie journalism as journalism. That, you know, you're not reporting on what's happening in the world. You're reporting on Tom Cruise throwing a fit on the set. It's not quite the same. And I do agree there are degrees here, and I'll get into that later. But do you think that there is a shocking lack of integrity when it comes to entertainment journalism, where we stand right now compared to even where we were in the 1980s, Glenn?
Well, it's I think it's the partly to do with public expectations, pretty much alluding to what you've just said to some degree, that people look at something like movie journalism and they kind of think that it's not that important. So, you know, when you're talking about the standards of the reporting and the integrity that should be involved in it, it's very easy to sort of dismiss it as being something trivial. Has it got any worse now? Possibly, but that might be to do with the shift in the media, maybe, that is sort of transmitting it, i.e. the internet. But I think, you know, to some degree, it's always been kind of like that, hasn't it?
It kind of has, but I see it as getting worse. Maybe I'm too close, but I see it as worse than it used to be. What do you think, Sarah?
I think that it benefits the people who don't want to be looked at too close. If you can keep people in the state of mind that this is fantasy and this is fluff and this is all about entertainment, then they're going to forget that that movie costs $300 million and there's no accountability for that, especially since that $300 million is only above the line, doesn't even include below the line or advertising. So you might have spent $500 million, and how much of that went into that person's summer home?
Well, there's that, but then there's also the aspect of something like reviews. You know, reviews might not be considered journalism, but do you say, like, a movie review or a review of a music album or a review of a video game can be tainted by the access to it? What I mean by that is, go back to the 1980s and look at Cinema Fantastique magazine. They were kind of the balls-out movie magazine for genre fans. They were the ones that talked about the stuff that Starlog wouldn't touch, that Fangoria wouldn't touch. They were the ones that would burn all the bridges to get the truth out there. They were sort of the Young Turks of the movie journalism. They didn't care who they stepped on as long as they reported the truth. And they did the same thing with their movie reviews. They didn't say, yeah, you gave us a set visit, an exclusive interview, so that automatically gives you a good review. They were like, yeah, the movie was terrible. And what happened to them was the movie studios put an embargo on them. Cinema Fantastique reporters were not allowed set visits. They were not allowed access to the stars. It was, you people keep shitting on our movies. Why should we give you access? We're going to give the access to Starlog because they gave us a good review. Is that movie journalism biting you in the ass that now you can't compete because you were too honest? Does that say that you have to play the game to a degree in something like film to even have access to be able to play the game at all? Sarah?
Sadly.
Or Glenn, go ahead.
Yeah,
I was trying to alternate, you know, but go ahead.
Excuse me, I'm just jumping in. Yeah, I think to some degree there is that aspect that, you know, the studios are kind of looking at this this resource, which is journalism, and they're going, it's basically a furtherance to the advertising campaign, and essentially it's a free commodity for them, but they will pick and choose which bits and that they want. They, you know, they're not going to go to the person that is likely to, like you say, shit on them, because why would they? Is it correct, or is it
But when they do that, Glenn, doesn't that give even the perception of bought and paid for reviews? Then doesn't that mean the subsequent review from Starlog is completely tainted, at least in the public's eye, if they know they only got the set access because they gave the good review?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, it's who to blame in this sort of respect. Is it the studio or is it the people that are doing the journalism? And unfortunately, it's the weakest link in the chain which is causing the problem, you know, i.e. it's all the magazines that want to run this stuff so desperately that are basically bending over and taking out the backside from
buggery.
These studios. Yes, buggery. They're the ones that are actually causing the problems, because, I mean, if all the journalism was honest and had that level of integrity where they went, well, okay, we'll be honest about what we're going to say, then the playing field would be a lot more even, and, you know, the studios would have to deal with these people no matter what. But unfortunately, the situation is that there's too many of these companies that are publishing that want to have the access, that need to have the access. So they will pretty much softball whatever they need to do to get into there. So, you know, yeah, it's a kind of problem which is perpetuated by the industry of publishing and loved by the studios.
Well, because there's something called press on set. A lot of especially bigger movies will announce via their IFBs to the various PAs and everything, press on set, which what that means is be on your best behavior so they don't see something they're not supposed to. So if the big star is going to be sexually harassing the coked out hooker in his trailer, we need to hide that from the press. I think that's disingenuous at all. Press on set should not matter or should not make a difference in how the set is run. But I'm an idealistic libertard. Sarah, your thoughts?
I saw something yesterday that made me sad as a human being. Did you know that Entertainment Tonight is still on the air?
Yeah, I run across it in the listings. I never watch it, but sometimes it's on the on-screen guide.
No, they don't even use the full name anymore. Like everything else, they cut it down. Yes, and I do believe that it is extraterrestrial in origin, because it has nothing to do with anything that occurs on this planet. But to be able to do the type of reporting that you're asking for one, you have to have a solid following of people to support you. So we're talking in this time and age, you're going to have to get yourself a Kickstarter or something, because there's no way you're going to be able to get advertisers. And then you're going to somehow, if you want to keep your journalistic integrity, pause for laughter, then you're going to have to get such the shadow type of group of spies for you, because within 2 weeks, everyone is going to know your face and exactly what that means.
Isn't that what the paparazzi see themselves at? Because most paparazzis have an organized network of spies that they pay off to know, hey, Lindsay Lohan is in this vegan restaurant throwing a fit. Get down here. Isn't that kind of what the paparazzi are? In a way, didn't what you just described, isn't that People magazine and the Inquirer and shit like that?
But can't we turn them for good instead of evil?
I'm not sure. There was a Star cover recently that had, this was right after Robin Williams' suicide, that had about 9 different celebrities, all old, all infirmed. Who will die next? What are your votes? Which is the most vile, sickest thing I had ever seen in my life. And these people call themselves journalists. In the documentary Celebrity with an S, one of the paparazzi actually says this. He actually describes himself as being a journalist on the a photojournalist on the same level as a war correspondent in Afghanistan. Is that ridiculous hyperbole? Or when you get down to what journalism means, are they generally the same? Glenn?
Oh, wow. In terms of value, certainly it's completely off to say that sort of thing. You know, I mean, somebody who's reporting on a war in Afghanistan is doing a job which has, well, hopefully has value if they're doing their job properly. You know, and they're literally putting life and limb on the line. To some extent, you could say that, I guess, of the entertainment paparazzi. Simply because, you know, they do stupid shit to get photos. But I struggle to justify that kind of hyperbole, as you describe it. It's completely off, and it actually is distasteful as the subject matter that they tend to cover, in my opinion.
I was actually a little offended, in all honesty.
I think I am. Yeah, I think it's a pretty grotesque thing for them to do that, and it's a weird sense of self-justification that they seem to be doing at this really desperate scrabble that this person that's made that comment seems to be making to justify what it is they do for a living and to try to make it somehow noble in their own minds, because I think anybody in their right mind would look at what they do as, generally speaking, being at best pretty much gutter work, at worst pretty damn despicable.
I find it horribly insulting. It would be funny if there wasn't a context. If there wasn't a context, you could go, this person is self-delusional, and if they really did believe this, then you could send them on a day trip overseas, and then they would realize how horribly selfish and wrong they were. When you have people who are war correspondents, who their job is to get in harm's way, and especially if they come from the United States or the United Kingdom, there is a policy in place that if you get abducted, nobody is trading anything for you. So
a friend of mine had to sign one of those fucking waivers when he went overseas. It was kind of, I don't know if I could sign that waiver. I don't know if I could.
Yeah, the worst thing if you're a paparazzi is that you might get your foot run over by a car, or you might get your camera smashed. If you're a war correspondent, the worst thing is that you are captured, kept for a year, your family goes insane, and then you are killed on screen. There's a slight difference.
Yeah.
But I think to a degree, and I am a little bit going against my own argument here, when you take down to the core level of journalism, isn't it kind of the same? They're telling the truth about the given situation that they're in. At the core level, isn't there some similarity, though? Glenn?
I'm trying to work out, trying to understand what you're getting at in that respect. I mean, do you mean, is there a truth to what paparazzi do compared to what war journalists do?
What I mean is the term journalism means to expose the truth. Mm-hmm. And in Afghanistan, the war correspondents are doing that, and so are the paparazzi. So to a degree, when you get to the core values of the word journalism, aren't they the same?
No, because I don't think when you're talking particularly about the paparazzi in relation to popular figures, in entertainment, they're not really looking for the truth. They're looking for sensation, pure and simple. They're looking for the grotesque picture of Lindsay Lohan. They're looking for somebody's famous stumbling drunk out of a pub, or seeing them cheating on someone. They don't, or at least what they could claim to be those things. They're not really looking for the story behind it. In fact, I mean, you look at most of this stuff, there is no story behind most of this stuff, other than, oh, this person appears to be doing something bad. So in that respect, no. I mean, war journalism sometimes can go that way. Certainly there's cases where journalists have been used in propaganda kind of circumstances. But is it on the same level? I think it's different, because certainly when it comes to entertainment news and that kind of stuff, it is a much more frivolous subject, at least in the eyes of people who are watching it. But I guess, you know, certainly the celebrities that are involved in it probably have a very different opinion of that. Certainly if you had your name dragged through the mud by these people, that's got to be pretty damn rough.
Sarah?
Josh, to extrapolate this, I will ask you this question. Both of these things are cooking. One is making a cup of noodles. The others is preparing fugu. These are both under the same umbrella.
Okay, fugu can kill you if it's not prepared properly. Noodles will just taste bad.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
Okay, because, yeah, you know what? The only reason I knew about fugu? The Simpsons. The episode where Homer ate the fugu. So seriously, Sarah, you almost got me on that one, because I almost didn't know what that was. And I'm like, wait, Homer ate that.
Yes, but what hasn't Homer eaten?
Very true. Well, let's move this to a quid pro quo then. Do you think that a quid pro quo is required to a degree, or it's just sort of institutionalized? For instance, like in the video gaming world, like the whole Doritos thing, where I think it was Halo 4's launch. I might be wrong on what the game was. And the guy is sitting there reviewing the game, surrounded by Mountain Dew and Doritos. He's giving it a great review, and it turns out that two of the big investors in the game were Mountain Dew and Doritos. Does that kind of belie anything he has to say about the game, that he's basically a paid spokesman? Or even better, Harry Knowles, that fat Jabba the Hutt ginger motherfucker, that he's made it clear on Ain't It Cool News, his reviews are for sale. It can be the worst movie in history. If he gets a free set visit and possibly even a cameo in the movie, or an exclusive interview with the director or a star, it will get praised beyond belief. And to speak to Harry Knowles, he also doesn't like to disclose little things like personal bias. For instance, the John Carpenter Masters of Horror episodes, he has praised those up and down as just being so fantastic. He never quite tells you that he's personal friends with the director, John Carpenter, and that the writer, Drew McWeeny, of both of those episodes, is a former Ain't It News contributor and his best friend in the world. Do you think you should disclose any bias, or do you think someone like Harry Knowles going, reviews for sale, reviews for sale, why do people still put so much faith in, oh, Ain't It Cool News said this movie's great. Ain't It Cool News said this movie is terrible. When you're for sale, why do you carry weight? Sarah?
Well, I'm going to skip over the obvious physical joke.
I didn't mean that, but yes, I did set you up.
And I would say that quid pro quo is the exact opposite of a person who has established respect. One takes actual doing. One takes someone having integrity. The other one, as long as you can live with yourself. And I have not had, I don't know if I ever did have respect for the gentleman, but someone must be listening to him. I don't know who is. I'll have to go back to the Stanley quote of, every comic book is somebody's first comic book. Someone has to be coming to his articles for the first time and not realizing that it hasn't seen anything that discounts him yet, and then they have to learn for themselves. You got me there, Josh.
What about you, Glenn? Do you think Harry Knowles, having put it out there, not in these terms, obviously, that his reviews are for sale and that he can be bought, do you think that means his reviews have, no pun intended, more or less weight to them?
I think they're reduced to the level of being advertisements. And it's down to him, really, to be honest about that kind of thing when he puts them out there, and not to be perfectly honest. I don't know the guy's work. I've never seen it. So I can't comment personally on the integrity of his reviews or otherwise. But if it is, as you say it is, then certainly he should... Who can trust it? Because, you know, at the end of the day, he's a paid spokesman. He is an advertiser for this stuff. It's like expecting the tobacco industry to turn around and say, yeah, yeah, this stuff's really, really good. It's not going to hurt you at all when they're selling it. You know, so.
Well, in America, you can't even say that it's hurting you. Otherwise, that's defamation.
Mm-hmm. But when it comes to kind of, obviously, it's a lot less physically damaging when it's a film review, but it's fraud, in my opinion, when you do that kind of stuff. If you have those kind of interests, you should be honest about them, I think. But then, of course, when you're honest about the interests that you have in it, people are going to look at you and go, well, why should I trust you? Well, unless you're particularly entertaining, of course.
Speaking of integrity and whatnot, this is going to come down to the differences in our two countries. Mm-hmm. We have the First Amendment, which is what the Inquirer and the Star and all that hide behind with, you know, we can publish whatever we want. It doesn't have to be truthful. And to not get too political, in 1998, Fox News in America won a lawsuit. Well, they filed the lawsuit in 98. They won it in the early 2000s. That said, you do not have to have a good faith basis that something is true to be able to call it news. They essentially sued for the right to lie and still call it news. Now, in America, that stands. In the UK, where you guys don't have the First Amendment like we do, why are do the tabloids seem to be even worse over there than over here when they don't have the same kind of protection, Glenn?
I think it's partly to do with traditionally to do with the popularity of the medium. Yeah, like, well, I mean, yeah, going back to the video nasties and stuff like that, when they were kind of talking about very spurious things related to the films that they were talking about. They could get away with it.
At one point, didn't Mary Whitehouse admit she didn't watch them?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Yeah, I've never seen them, and I don't have to. I don't need to see them to know what's in these films. it was kind of what she said. But the tabloids are pretty much the same. Most of them, they didn't see what was in these films, and they didn't care. They just basically outright slandered them, the people that sold them, the directors that made them, the production companies that put these things together, the distribution companies that put them out. And you see that happen, you know, in so many examples. I don't know why it's particularly bad over here. I think it's probably the balance has probably shifted somewhat, you know, over the last 20 years. We were certainly the worst in the 80s for that kind of stuff, you know, just letting these newspapers
the
go off on.
The hyperbole alone on the nasty stuff was shocking.
Absolutely. When you're they actually directly blamed Miyazaki for the rape and murders that a young lad committed. In fact, they actually had an interview where they put the mother of the criminal in the same room as him and got her to ask him some questions. And that's quite an interesting read. And yeah, journalistic ethics in that respect is how do they get away with it? Sometimes they don't. I think these days we've had, you know, issues with the Express. I think it was the Express that were wiretapping and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if you heard anything about that.
Oh, yeah. Now,
is this after the Rupert Murdoch stealing voicemails thing?
Oh, they were tapping people's phones and reading their emails and all kinds of stuff. It was absolutely outrageous.
Well, the NSA does that over here. It's just not a tabloid.
This was before that, you know. I mean, this is before all that broke. And then suddenly, you know, you got journalists, private citizens going around and going into people's phones. I think it was Millie Dowler, I think it was. They hacked into her voicemail. And this is at the point that they hadn't found out that she was dead. And the parents and the police were kind of going, somebody's listening to these voice messages we're leaving. Maybe she's alive. And the thing was, the people that, when they actually found out what was going on, the editor of the newspaper was given a hell of a lot of support from our prime minister, which says something. You know, when you're talking about politicians rallying around the newspapers and the editors of newspapers and giving them pep talks and having cozy little conversations on horseback in the country, you kind of go, yeah, there's something wrong there. I mean, because especially considering the government were actually in charge of investigating what was going on in that situation. And it's quite outstanding. I mean, I'm still to this day really quite bitter about those events and the fact that an awful lot of the people that were guilty got off.
That's part of the problem. But in America, we've got the same thing. I mean, Sarah, you live in California. There's no way you haven't just run across some paparazzi chasing somebody down, right?
We'll say that I have, yeah.
You know, it's kind of sickening how far you'll go for entertainment. Now, to go back to the whether it's on the same level as like war correspondent, is it right if, say, they were trying to root out a terrorist organization and were listening to those voicemails versus trying to get a scoop on what celebrity is going down on the other celebrity? Is there a degree of difference based on the perceived outcome, Sarah?
Well, for one thing, if you were doing this for terroristness that you're trying to get, you would like to think that they would have, if not the local authorities involved, higher up authorities involved. If you're doing this for your yellow journalism paper, you're going to have as few people in that party as possible just because you don't want anyone else to get the scoop before you do. So there is a definite difference between these.
Well, it's a matter of public interest, isn't there? And this is such a grey area. There's this whole kind of idea that a celebrity's sex life is public interest. The voicemails that they leave is public interest. Does that really compare against someone who is suspected of being a terrorist? Is that public interest? How much is it public interest?
I heard one paparazzi actually say, if you wanted privacy, then why did you become famous?
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most astoundingly stupid things I have ever heard.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the recent semi-naked photos that were dragged off of the internet and published, and
I actually did check out the Jennifer Lawrence ones. I don't know if that makes me just as bad.
Well, that's an arguable point, but I mean, the whole thing is part of the argument for people that are doing that sort of stuff is, oh, they're famous. You know, I mean, it's public interest. No, it isn't. You know, when you're talking about something like that, that is not something that the public need to see. It might be something that the public want to see, but it isn't something that is necessary, not in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion.
But don't you have a right to a certain level of privacy? Look for what just happened with, like, the Ebola nurse here.
Mm-hmm.
That You know, she doesn't have Ebola. She was helping Ebola patients. She came back here. Chris Christie, in his true thug nature, quarantined her against her will. He basically superseded her civil rights and said that those don't matter because I'm running a campaign of fear here. And then she goes for a bike ride. The next week, she's being made fun of on Saturday Night Live, and these people know nothing about her. She did nothing to make her famous besides helping sick people and standing up to a corrupt fucking thug governor. Why does that give – and I do understand Saturday Night Live has the right, but why does that make her famous? Isn't that her being famous against her will? Why does that supersede her right to privacy? Sarah?
You know, it reminds me of the woman who suddenly became famous because Rush Limbaugh said that we all wanted to see her have sex if we were going to pay for her
Sandra
birth
Fluke.
Control. Yeah. This woman who stood up to Christie, and anyone who does that, they are in my pile of friends. Because Christie goes, yeah, she'll thank me later when she's, you know, thought this over. You know, the poor little dear, you know, she only has a woman's brain. So, you know, even though she is a medical professional, Christie is not a doctor. I don't think that he's seen a doctor
Christie
in
believes,
a while.
Christie believes he's a member of Tony Soprano's crew. You can even hear the way he talks about it, you know? Like, hey, go ahead and sue me, bitch. I've been sued tons of times. I always win. Go ahead, sue me.
But it's just mind-boggling. And they put this woman in Guantanamo-like conditions. You know that she was in a tent
unheated.
With only an unheated tent with a box to shit into with only a piece of paper to cover her until someone decided, oh, wait, she might die that way. So they volunteered her some clothes.
Wow.
Yeah, that really happened, Glenn.
And, yeah.
And by doing that, keep in mind, she did nothing wrong. She's being made fun of on Saturday Night Live. Is
yes.
that fair? Because she didn't ask for this. You know what I mean, Sarah?
Yes. Yeah. And there is so much ignorance going about to the point where you describe the newscaster who used the word poopy, because the only way, Glenn, for you to get this is if it gets to the point where a person is shitting themselves and projectile vomiting and you ingest that. That is how it is transferred. Unless you
actually had to have a news reporter on the air say, don't eat the poopy. Because apparently New Yorkers need to be told this.
Mm. Well, there has been a lot of mileage over that subject, you know, across the world. It's not just in America, obviously. And, yeah, the level of fear-mongering. And let's face it, when it comes to news media, they love a good scare. They always have done, whether it's avian flu, whether it's Ebola, whether it's earthquakes or whatever. They love to indulge in that sort of stuff because it engages the audience. And there is always going to be that bad news is good news kind of attitude. And, you know, ethically that's not that's dubious, to say the least. But, you know, practically, that's possibly a different matter.
And I wonder about the lack of trust. This woman has been monitoring herself. She's been asymptomatic, which means you do not have symptoms. I'm asymptomatic. Josh is asymptomatic. You are asymptomatic because none of us have Ebola. But she's checked herself twice a day, and she can show you that she doesn't have it. Is this a mistrust of people who are just better people than themselves because she went overseas and helped people that might die if she didn't do that? Are we going to punish people for being all those damn things that the people who pretend to be Bible thumpers say that they're for?
We actually have been, because in America, any of Doctors Without Borders that are working with Ebola patients or going to Ebola countries are being held at the border now for the incubation period. So they are being punished. You can't come home. We have to make sure you don't have the zombie virus. You know, okay, remember that scene in Life Force? I know you'll get this, Glenn. Remember that scene in Life Force where they won't let the two people back into London because we have to wait for the incubation period to see if you're infected? It's like mm-hmm. that, but for a month.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the kind of doctors that sort of go out there, you know, who have been given time from their regular employment to do that, that's, you know, a make or break deal for a lot of them.
Well, and Glenn, this isn't even have been given time. They're doing this on their own dime. They are taking their vacation time. They are paying to help other people. And so they get punished for
that. That's what altruism gets you, damn it.
I'd be more interested, though, to know how that story broke about that nurse. I mean, surely, did Christie announce that he did that?
Her lawyer contacted the media.
Right.
Because I'm sure he wanted it kept as quiet as possible. Her lawyer was like, you know what? I'm not going to get anywhere legally with this right now. Well, there's always Channel 2.
But that's a funny backfire then, isn't it, in some respects? Because if she got flack for her own lawyer's actions, then it's a little bit of a shooting herself in the foot sort of thing. Although, you know, obviously she was put into a terrible situation. I don't know if I would have done anything different to how she did it, but
I would have torn down one of the walls in my tent and gone and kissed
the nearest policeman.
I'd have been throwing feces like monkey style on the soldiers just to, you know, freak them all out. Hey, fucker, let's see how you like living in a tent now.
Yeah, well, you had a whole box of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think that would have worked out terribly considering you get shot in your country for God knows the littlest things these days.
That's true. But let's swing this back to entertainment. We got a little serious for a little bit there. Let's swing this back to entertainment. What about, like, now we're not going to talk about Gamergate, which I don't like the name of anyway, you know, for the whole sex, gender reasons. But what about something like what happened with Gamergate? How no matter what, whether you think it's sexist or not, it pretty much turned out she paid with her vagina for good reviews, that she was sleeping with video game journalists who all gave her rather boring game a glowing review. The journalist she didn't sleep with did not give her game a good review. Or even on another level, Kanan Lynch and GameSpot.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was GameSpot.com became Kanan Lynchified for about a month before Kanan Lynch 2 came out. Banners everywhere. The backgrounds were Kanan Lynch. Lots of ads. Kanan Lynch everywhere. Then the game came out, and GameSpot gave it it was like a 5 or a 6 out of 10 review. It was kind of like, it's not a bad game, but it's not a great game. Well, Ubisoft, I think it was an Ubisoft game, kind of went back to GameSpot. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What happened? We bought thousands of dollars of ads on your site, and then you give us a bad review? What the hell's up with that? That it was basically, we bought ads, so that meant we bought a good review. That's the understanding we thought we had. What are your thoughts? Should that be the way it is? Or do you think if this has been so industrialized that that's the way advertisers are made to think because that's the way it's been? You buy ads, you get a good review. Sarah?
I think it's their hopeful thinking. I think that they are banking on the psychology that if I give you a lot of money, you're going to feel indebted to me. And if you remember about the GameSpot thing, is that right after that happened, they had a bunch of people suddenly no longer working for them because they would not work in that culture, that they were not going to give it a glowing review, that they weren't going to be pressured by that. And Ubisoft, they are so known for their ethical practices. What was it? The game that came out or is coming out, and they have multiplayer, but they can't do a female model for the character because that would be too much work and effort. And then within hours, people who are within the industry went, No, you're just being lazy and cheap. Shut up. But wow, I went on an entire tangent. How was that? That was fun.
This show's all about tangents. It always has.
Yeah, no, I'll go back to the I'll buy it on the Gamergate thing a little. When it comes to the reports that she slept with various journalists and they gave good reviews for that, whether that's true or not, I think that says an awful lot more about the journalist than it does her, to be fair, simply because...
That's a very valid point. I don't 100% agree with it, but it's a very valid counterpoint.
You know, because at the end of the day, you got Ubisoft throwing money. She had a commodity, if it's true.
Honestly, I'm not sure which is more dangerous, her commodity or Ubisoft's.
Well, one of them might be less buggy. That's all I'm saying.
But, yeah, at the end of the day, these things, are, if they're being sold and stuff, it says an awful lot more about the journalists who kind of say, yeah, fair enough, we'll go easy on you and that kind of stuff. And but it does like, about the people that are actually, you know, saying, look, help us out here. If we give you this, will you give us a good review? Because they're just, you know, they're just trying to sell their product at the end of the day. The currency is... You know, in one case, sex, another case, money. The result is the same.
It comes down like a certain horror, a couple of horror movie magazines that recently came out that an author was trying to get his book reviewed, a horror novel, and he kept sending it to some of these magazines. And they wouldn't review it, and he finally got a hold of one of them via email. And he's like, why won't you review my book? It's relevant to what's going on and whatnot. He's like, I'm not asking you to give me a positive review. I just want you to review the book. Their response was, and I'm quoting, well, you didn't buy any ads, did you? That it was basically, if you buy a couple of pages of ads for your book, we'll be more than happy to review it. But that's their quid pro quo. Because go and look at some of the modern horror magazines. You'll notice... almost everything that is advertised in there in a given issue is also reviewed in that issue. You'll notice how, those things kind of go together, doesn't it? Buying ads, getting a review. That's not the way it should go, is it?
It's not journalism.
Well, it certainly isn't. But this is the funny thing. Yeah, I think with the advent of, the likes of what, like what I do, you've got independent reviewers that are out there who don't get paid to do this stuff, who do it for the love of it. I think the days of people of in journalism being able to get away with doing that is possibly numbered, because, you know, they're going to lose the faith of their audience at the end of the day, because people are going to look at them and go, yeah, well, you've done this, that, and the other. This person's not being paid.
Do you really think the audience cares, Glenn?
It depends. It depends on how well it's sold, I guess, at the end of the day. If it's entertaining enough, they will watch it. Will they believe it, or will they look at it as a piece of entertainment? That's the question. I've always found... you know, over the last 10, 15 years, that the stuff that you find online from independent reviewers and stuff has been occasionally a lot more honest, simply because it doesn't have that conflict of interest.
There's no corporate bias.
No, exactly. You know, it's someone's opinion. And that's really what it should be when it comes to reviewing. You can agree with it or not, but it should be down to someone's opinion, not, will this give me more money? Because it stops being a review at that point. It becomes an advert.
Well, how about when it comes to quality in research? Glenn, you knew I was going to go off on this. You and I were going off in private messages before this. In the age of the internet, why are paid journalists not able to use Google properly? For Okay, IO9 is a website whose balls I like to break as much as possible, because I don't think I can read a single article on their site without finding some factual error. And this is just about movies and shit. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was reading one on the Hellraiser movies, and they mentioned New World Pictures, how, oh, you know, Clive Barker went to Roger Corman to get this money to get this made. Hellraiser was made in 1987. Roger Corman sold New World in 1982. That was really easy to find out, but they kept going on about how Roger Corman was involved. No, he wasn't! Or how a recent review of Halloween 3, a big article on the cult built around Halloween 3, had Nigel Neal of the Quatermass series. They had him listed as the writer of the Alan Quatermass series. The writer meant Alan Quartermain and not Bernard Quatermass. Two totally different things. And this is a paid writer on Yahoo. And I'm going, fucking really? Or one of my favorites, and this was in a print magazine, a recent issue of Maxim, well, maybe last year, of Maxim, had a little blurb on Dolph Lundgren and a picture of Reb Brown.
Oh.
And then on the same page, they had a thing on Jason from the Friday the 13th movies, and the blurb specifically says, over 300 on-screen kills. Alex Jowski actually broke it all down movie to movie. Keep in mind, Jason killed nobody in the first movie or fifth movie.
Mm-hmm.
He only has 197 on-screen kills, and even if you factor in the two movies that weren't Jason, that still doesn't equal 300. Why? I mean, and then when I go off on this, people go, that's just nitpicking. Why can't you just leave it alone? Doesn't that mean journalistic integrity too? Getting your fucking facts right?
Sarah? I don't know where...
Whoever, I don't know. I'm
sorry,
mad.
You carry on, Sarah.
I don't know where editors have gone. I don't know how this is no longer a job. At this point, I think that only in comic book stories, and I mean... within the stories themselves, not the people who are doing the comic books, Perry White is our last editor that demands two sources, and I don't know how that doesn't make you sad.
When J. Jonah Jameson is a better editor than in real life, there's a problem.
I think there's certainly an issue with the structure of organized media in that respect. When you're talking about having those checks and balances, it seems that perhaps maybe they're left wanting somewhat. When you're talking about independent reviewers, sometimes it's just a case, it's a typo, you've got nobody else to check it. You kind of have to take certain things into consideration.
But all the examples I gave were places that have editors and paid writing staff.
And when they got people like editors and people who should be fact-checking, then yes, it's a lot less forgivable. Mistakes do creep in, especially with the immediacy of how media goes out these days.
Absolutely, but I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I remember you had the balls. You made a mistake in your Parasite review, and after I pointed it out to you, you were not like a lot of these people, I'll just leave it up. You went and re-recorded, because I believe you said Parasite was made by Charles Brand instead of Charles Band, and I pointed that out to you. You had the integrity to go, no, I fucked up. I got to pull this review down and re-record all the audio, and then you put it up fixed. That shows some integrity, and I'm not saying that just because you're virtually sitting in front of me, because these, like IO9 and stuff, I emailed all these people. Mm-hmm. They're still not changed because they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, maybe that's to do with the scale of what I do compared to what they do. That's not an excuse for them, though. I mean, for me, it's important to try and get it as right as possible. And obviously, a lot of what someone like I did is opinion-based, you know, more or less informed, depending on who you're talking about.
Opinion is opinion. Mm-hmm. In the Parasite review, you made a factual mistake.
Yes, I did.
Which you went out of your way to correct. And I'm sorry, like I said, for putting you on the spot, but
that's fine.
I think it's a good thing that you corrected that. That's why I want people to know that you've got that integrity.
Yeah, because I think it's important if I fuck up. But, you know, and it's a human thing. People do. I don't take it personally, because
You were kind of mad at
sometimes.
me when I pointed it out. I remember, ah, fucking damn it!
Nah, that wasn't me. Wasn't mad at you. I was mad at myself, because I made it. I'd actually wrote the review, and in the first half of it, I'd done it right, and it's the second half. A typo had creeped in, and I didn't realize when I was recording that I'd done that. And when I kind of went to type up credits and stuff like that, I was looking at the later half of the review and kind of went, ah, shit. When you told me, it was like, oh, it was such a facepalm moment as well, because the review was sort of up, and you got all the views and all that kind of stuff. And then I had to take it down and put it back up again. But I couldn't leave it as it was, because it didn't seem right, you know. And you were perfectly right to tell me that it was wrong.
But I mean, Sarah, do you agree that, or do you think I'm being a nitpicker by pointing out that Maxim is talking about Dolph Lundgren while showing Reb Brown, or pointing out that IO9 are a bunch of idiots because Roger Corman had nothing to fucking do with Hellraiser just because it was New World, the company he used to own? I can't even count how many people said, just let it go, you're nitpicking.
No, if it's something that's on the internet and it's written on the internet, then it's even easier than when Glenn corrected his mistake, because all you have to do is change letters on a screen that aren't even printed on paper. So the maximum one might be a little bit more difficult. They would have to put in a later issue. We put in this correction, which I don't even know if they do that in newspapers anymore, but on a page on the internet that barely exists as a thing that's tangible, they can do that in 3.5 seconds.
And in fact, in one case, they did. The AV Club had an article on VHS collecting, and the director of Tales of the Quad Dead Zone and Black Devil Doll from Hell, Chester Novel Turner, they had listed as Chester Albert Turner. I just, you know, I w didn't do it in a jerk-ass way. I just sent an email to the AV Club and corrected them. They thanked me for it. And within 5 seconds after the thank you email, I refreshed the page and it said Chester Novel Turner. The Onion has more artistic integrity than IO9. Yeah, I just said that.
Yeah, some people get a little bit butthurt when you kind of point out the fact that they've made a mistake. Sometimes that's the way it's been kind of pointed out to them. Sometimes it's because they just don't like to admit that they've made a mistake. Personally, I kind of look at it as, well, yeah, no, I'm a human, as are any journalists. They're all human at the end of the day. Might not behave like it necessarily, but yeah, you know, it can be a little bit of a sting when somebody points out that you're fucked up, basically.
But I think that Josh did point out something interesting when he said that the Onion corrected themselves and that that the other site corrected themselves. Humor sites do seem to take themselves more seriously in that they already know that they're at
How
a
ironic that
disadvantage.
statement
Well, yes,
is.
that there was an NPR interview with some of the writers from Cracked. It was at least one of them that was able to get the name after the magazine folded, that they said that they double check and triple check everything because they don't want to be seen as a site that can't be trusted. And if you're coming from the angle of doing it as a comedy, I think that that's why The Daily Show, Tooth and Nail, just that they're funny, but they want you to show that they have integrity. They want you to be able to believe
Sadly
them.
enough, Sarah, The Daily Show is the most trusted news source on TV right now. What does that say?
That says nobody else gets it.
Well, okay, maybe not the most. Last Week Tonight with John Oliver does a lot
Oh,
of
that's
research too.
awesome.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, they do tons of research on their stuff, but they still, and John Oliver's admitted this, they try to be funny above being news.
But
Yeah,
isn't
because
that
that's their
the same
purpose, isn't it?
company?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, When they're doing what they're doing, they don't want to be seen as a joke. And that's the difference, I think, is although they're in the business of being funny, they don't want to be the joke themselves. So these people will be very, very careful about what they say, how they say it. Because otherwise they'd just be written off as being snarky, and that's not what they want. And I think, the whole kind of trust with those kind of programs comes from the audience knowing that they are actually sort of caring about what it is they're talking about. It's not just that they're being funny. Because I mean, you get people like Fox News constantly trying to make jokes and stuff like that, which fall completely flat on their asses. Because
Well, that's because they're tinged in racism and
yeah,
a bullshit
exactly.
nostalgia.
Yeah, and that when they make those jokes and stuff, that somebody's going to be fact-checking those jokes, and it gets pointed out left, right, and bloody centre when they make these mistakes. And because of the supposed gravitas of what they do, when they make a mistake, it's a much, much bigger issue.
Yeah,
Well, I think.
Josh. What are those two women who are on the air and doing the news as they're drinking alcohol? I came across that as I was flipping channels one day. I was like, okay, we're absolutely at the bottom of the barrel right now. How can you be reporting things that you're saying are news? They're not. It's fluff
No,
pieces.
Sarah, you may be too young to remember this, and Glenn, I don't know if they had this over there. In the early 90s, I don't remember what channel it was. One channel had the naked news. They would do the real news, real weather, real what's going on in Afghanistan and whatnot, while being topless and whatnot. That was a real thing. Do you think that underpinned how truthful? Let's say the news was 100% accurate. Do you think having a big-titted model sitting there naked in front of you underpins it or makes you a little more stimulated to get
Oh,
the news?
I think that you would pay attention to the entire time she was talking about Mideast policy as she was shifting in her chair.
I'm wondering with the Sun, does that does page 3 of the Sun? I don't know if the Sun in America has
No.
The infamous page 3. Page 3 of the Sun over here has traditionally had a topless woman.
I'm okay
So
with that.
you get this tabloid newspaper, and page 3, tits. So, does it kind of focus your attention on the news? Well, I guess an awful lot of the readership doesn't necessarily get past page 3, to be quite honest with you. But hey,
At least you open the paper.
yeah,
Exactly.
and then
Well,
you wipe your ass on the rest of it.
and speaking of that, like artistic and or journalistic integrity, it has had a weird shift. In the 70s and prior, the commercial division, selling ads in newspapers or commercials on television, was a completely separate division than the news. The news was always seen as a loss leader, that we know we're going to lose money here. But then eventually they started to be like, you're reporting on that Salmonella outbreak at Papa Murphy's. Papa Murphy's buys a lot of ads. They say if you keep reporting on that, they're going to pull their ads. We need you to stop reporting. Early in the 80s, it started to creep that the two departments came together. Do you think that was the beginning of this whole the advertisers are more important than the truth? Because I know back when I worked at one of my former employers, there was a local taco restaurant named Taco John's that was shut down for health code violations. We were not allowed to report it because Taco John's bought hundreds of dollars a week in ads. That sickened me to my core. That I looked at like the anchors like, and you call yourself a journalist? Sarah?
Yeah.
I wish that they still looked at it the way that the movie companies look at their Oscar bait movies. You know you're not going to make any money, but this is where you get the awards. This is where, I mean, I know that they don't have to frigging even apply for their ability to put stuff on the air. And technically it is the public airwaves, but let's see you try to enforce that. But yeah, there's that. There's the fairness doctrine is dead. There's all of those little things that used to ensure that it was for the community good, for the social good, that you had to actually report things that affected people's lives.
And if, then remember that Fox lawsuit that you don't have to even have a good – you used to have a good faith basis to put something on the air. You used to have to at least – I believe the information I got is true. You don't have to have that anymore after Fox's lawsuit, News Corp technically is lawsuit.
Isn't it that they can't call themselves news in Canada for that reason?
Exactly, yes. The Canadian law will not allow Fox News to be called Fox News because of that lawsuit.
Glenn. Yeah, I've thought that the term news ought to be a protected term.
It just doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, it doesn't. No, it's a tag which kind of means current affairs-ish these days. It's a funny thing. It's a Drop the Dead Donkey, actually, which I mentioned on the last episode. That kind of touched on the whole having the owners be in bed with the advertisers. Oh, you can't mention this on this in the news report because this person gives us a lot of money. You can't mention this about this politician because he happens to be friends with the owner of the station, all that kind of stuff. And it was satirizing it back in, you know, the early 90s. So yeah, it's a very real thing, and it's tragic, really, when you're talking about news, which is something you should be able to trust, and you can't, because it's so much to do with the money that's coming into the station, to the producers, that whatever happens to be reported is not necessarily kind of objective. It's always sort of passed through this filter of, will we offend this person? Will we lose money because we've said this, that, or the other? And, you know, that's not news. And that's again, it's advertising.
I have a question for you, Josh. You remember the two reporters that left the Russian news programs because they could not take how completely bullshit they were at that point. And then the point earlier that we had made about all of the people who don't watch either the news or they don't go to the websites that are highly advertised because there are alternates. What do you think will happen? I want you to extrapolate. Are you going to have people who can't take the way that this is now and leave their jobs the way that, I mean, you've had some reporters here in this country decide that they're going to go basically the online podcast route. So you're among many friends. But how is this going to happen? What is going to happen when you have all these people who are going to free sources, which are the only ones they can trust at this point, and all the paid ones have almost no audience whatsoever?
Well, you've got places like the Young Turks, which I don't always agree with, but they seem to be relatively balanced. And then, I don't know. What it comes down to is that you can't trust the corporate news structure anymore. But at the same time, to get the news, you have to have some sort of a corporate backing. So it's a double-edged sword that you need advertising to be able to afford to pay your reporters, but when you get advertising, then you are beholden to the corporate advertiser. I would say right now, the Young Turks is probably the closest to real internet news. Because this is a disturbing thing I've seen lately. Fake news sites. I'm not talking about stuff like The Onion or The Daily Current, which are satire sites, although Daily Current is not even remotely funny, even though they try to be. But I've seen a growing number of fake news sites that aren't trying to be funny. They just make up serious sounding, completely fake news. Not even about like, oh, President Obama or Sarah Palin did this. Just like, hey, this hooker was found dead in this hotel room and where she'd been rotting for 9 years. And it's all written like the AP would write it. And it's just fake news. And that's their entire thing. I don't understand the point of that. I don't understand just a straight fake news site. Am I missing the point, Glenn?
I don't think so. It's questionable what it is they're trying to do. I mean, maybe they are trying to be the Onion. Maybe it's a case that they're trying to troll people, essentially. But it's a real symptom of the internet, is that we have this wonderful thing where we have this global reach. We can talk to anyone, we can say pretty much anything we please. But we haven't, I don't think, as societies, managed to get it through our heads that there's a responsibility to that communication. Because people don't necessarily check the sources or check the claims that are made by these various peoples. It's something which I think we as humanity actually have
to... A site like Snopes should not need to exist, right?
Quite. it's quite amazing how many times that keeps coming up in like Facebook articles that sort of pop up and this person. Actually, that's one of the worst things, come to think of it. It's one of the worst things. You see all these things that appear on Facebook. This actor has died. You've seen a lot of that recently.
Yeah, it's I've like, seen a lot of those. And that's what I don't get is I think you are right on the trolling aspect, because they're not trying to be funny. They're not trying to make a point like The Onion does or like The Daily Current thinks it does. Yeah. They're just trying to be fake for the sake of, oh my God, I made that person really sad.
Yeah, and it's mean-spirited. And I think it speaks an awful lot of the kind of people that actually write it. It's not funny, it's just mean. It's nasty, trollish behavior of the worst kind. It has no point other than to make people feel like idiots or to hurt their feelings. You kind of look at it and you go, it's rather sad when it comes down to it.
I always double check everything before what the fuck. Because sometimes I do get some of my news from biased news sources, but then I go, okay, this is filled with hyperbole. I don't quite buy this. So then I'll go look for another news source so I can still find, okay, the core facts are still right if you take out the hyperbole. I don't go on the air on what the fuck with anything that I haven't at least verified that it's real. At least the core facts being real. Does that answer the question you had for me, Sarah?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah. I can't quite remember how many parts that question had. We're just having that thing happen today. But other than the few sources that we have on the internet, I think that the most ethical thing that I've seen recently was once again back on The Daily Show, and I hate having that as one of my few sources that I can look to, but you saw what happened when they found out that the Koch brothers were suddenly one of their sponsors.
Yes, and they're like, you know what? I'm going after the Koch brothers. It was glorious.
Yes, because as I said, what was it, 3 hours ago when we started? You either have quid pro quo or you have integrity, and you can't have both.
Exactly. But unfortunately, what we also can't have is any more of this show. We're running out of time. So I don't know if that's my integrity or not. Now, Sarah, if people would like to contact you or if people would like to send you creepy gifts, where would they do so?
You can do it as through Josh Hadley's house. I think that you all have that address by now.
I'm sure the trolls do.
You'll be able to see my stuff soon on 1201 Beyond. You can find me on almost anything as Anna McKeon. So if you see that, then that's probably me.
What about you, Glenn? Where do people want to find your reviews or contact you?
I'm on Geek Juice Media. I'm also on YouTube as LampyMan101, and you can find me on Facebook as Cynical Celluloid.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com, and you can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Have a little integrity. Don't fall for satire as real. And Snopes is an invaluable site, and I'm sad to say that it is, because it shouldn't be.
with the still unknown injections. Crystal memories, defection. Blonde haircuts and good protection. Who are you to criticize my intentions? The subtle and manipulative devices. Just like you, I got my vices. I got a thought that would be nice. I'd like to crush your head tight in my vice. Hey, you know. For all you punks in the press that want to start shit by printing lines instead of the things we said, that means you, Andy Sesher at Hit Parader, Circus Magazine, Mick Wall at Kerrang, Bob Guccione Jr. at Spin. What, you pissed off because your dad gets more pussy than you? Fuck you! Suck my fucking dick! You'd be ripping off the fucking kids while they'd be paying their hard-earned money to read about the bands they want to know about? Printing lies, starting controversy. You want to antagonize me? Antagonize me, motherfucker! Get in the ring, motherfucker, and I'll kick your bitchy little ass, punk!
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.